Good morning, everyone. I'm Jian Jiang from UC Berkeley. I'd like to start this talk with a video. This video demonstrates a online banking hijacking. As you see, the victim actually is doing an online banking payment. The online bank is showed with HTTPS with the green lock, but apparently it's hijacked. What the victim is doing constantly shows on the attacker's screen. The final result is that this payment actually goes to the attacker's account. How could this happen? Well, even if you do online banking only at home, and there's no phishing, no malware, no other security breaches, and so on, that still could happen only if you went to Starbucks weeks ago, opened some unencrypted news website, and this is sufficient for an attacker to inject a malicious cookie into your browser. And if you don't know that you need to clean your browser cookies, and you might get attacked. So to understand how this could happen, we need to first go to cookie details. Cookie is actually a browser-side storage to maintain HTTP states. Its interface is very simple. Mostly involve a name value, like a key value, and several options. So what is had from this simple interface is that those options actually plays very important roles. Its protocol works like this. So the important detail is that when cookie is stored, the key is not only the name. The key includes name, domain, and pass. Also, when cookie is sent, all cookies match with the URL. And for those matching cookies, only name and value are sent without any other fields. Another problem is that cookie has a very weak access control policy. So in web, the access control is based on the same origin policy, and the origin is usually defined by protocol, domain, and port. So different origins are isolated so that if you load multiple websites, they cannot affect each other. But for cookies, the origin only includes domain. And even the domain are not completely separated. If two cookies have some same suffix, they may share some domain cookie scope. For example, in this scenario, the attacker can actually inject cookies, goes to the good website, just because they have shared suffix and share cookie scope. Even one is HTTP and another is HTTPS. That doesn't matter because protocol is not included in the origin. The attacker injects cookies kind of in different ways. The simple way is that the attacker injects a cookie with same name, domain, and pass. Since the name, domain, and pass serve as cookie key, so it's exactly the same key, and you can completely overwrite a existing cookie. Even the cookie is flagged as secure. Or the attacker actually can inject a same name, but different domain and pass cookie. So this cookie will not overwrite the existing cookie, but both of them are present. And if the attacker knows how to control this injected cookie, the attacker can shadow existing cookie because the server, the interface is a key value. And most of the time, this key value only accepts the first value of same name cookies. So this is actually a known problem. But it is much less well known than the other web attacks. And we feel it is overlooked. It deserves a deep study. There's a particularly uncomfortable factor is that with cookie injection, when you see HTTPS indicator and you say this is a green and you feel safe, but it is actually not. Because the cookie actually might be tampered at some point. So cookie injection is different with malware infection because it's much simpler. You don't need a zero-day vulnerabilities. You just need a website. Not really careful use cookie, you can launch the attack. Our motivation is to understand the real-world impact of cookie injection attacks. How could attacker inject cookies? And what kind of attacks could be caused by cookie injection? And if the situation is bad, what should we do? For the first question, we look at potential attacking positions. So we are mainly concerned with two types of attackers. The first one is active network attacker at these insecure networks. This attacker is very powerful. The attacker can control browser to issue unencrypted requests to fake subdomains, then inject cookies. We are also concerned with a web attacker from shared domains. Shared domains have subdomains owned by mutually untrusted parties. Those parties might attack each other. Since shared domains provide shared cookie scope, a shared domain actually now is pretty common used by cloud hosting providers. Also, has been long time that used by CDNs. Fortunately, both the attackers have mitigations. To mitigate active network attacker, you need a browser never issues an unencrypted request to any related domain. And this technique is called HTTP Straight Transport Security, HSTS. It is implemented as a response header. However, in order to mitigate cookie injection attack, you need the HTTP HSTS deployed on the top level domain with include subdomain option. In real world, the deployment often insufficient. For example, Google actually deploy HSTS with include subdomain on accounts.google.com, but this is insufficient to protect google.com be used as a shared cookie scope to do cookie injection. The sufficient way should be HSTS include subdomain on google.com. We investigated the deployment of full HSTS, but suddenly the situation is very poor. Well, IE actually starts to support HSTS until very recently. So the IE users must go update. For the websites, only very few websites have deployed full HSTS. For example, only 8 in top 1,000. That means that most of attackers are subject to active network attackers and cookie injections. To mitigate another attacker, web attacker from shared domains, you need a browser to know that those shared domains cannot be used to set cookies. This technique is called public suffix NIST. It includes TLDs, TLD resolved domains, but for shared domains, the domain owner needs to go to the website to register their own domains. We also investigate the deployment of the public suffix NIST, and the situation is also not very good. While browsers already implement the NIST, many shared domains actually are not present on the NIST. We found several cloud hosting providers, but the major problem comes from CDNs. Most of the CDNs use shared domains, but do not register their domain on the list. So it is, this problem actually could be easily underestimated because in most cases, the shared domains of CDNs actually are used to host static resource files. You may say it's not a big deal. What you can do with cookie injection on those static resource files. But actually, at least you can do the denial of service attack. The attacker can inject a large amount of cookies so that this cookie header exceeds server limitation and the resource actually will be rejected by server. I think most of websites, if they use CDN shared domains, they probably subject to this kind of attack. We also looked at cookie implementations, and we found a number of issues that makes this problem worse. For example, we found that major browsers like Chrome, Safari, Firefox, and Opera actually make a similar mistake. When they handle a 407 response from a proxy, they actually accept cookies. This problem actually allows cookie injection even website deploy full HSTS if the browser is configured to use proxy. And it is probably interesting why they share the same mistakes, but we didn't really have time to investigate. Now we turn to the second question, what kind of attacks could be caused? It's actually highly depends on how websites use cookies. But we found websites actually use cookies very unsafely. We found a number of attacks on those large websites. Here I want to present three cases to illustrate the problem. The case one is about a Gmail interface. So in this Gmail interface, that's actually had two components. The one is the chat window, and the other is the main mailbox. Those two components actually are loaded from different URLs. And the cookie here are served as authentication token, as session cookies. So if the attacker injects his own session cookie with the domain and pass of this chat window, but with the same name of the session cookies. So the attacker could shadow the original session cookies so that this chat window is actually noted as the attacker's chat window, but the mailbox is still the user's. The mailbox keeps unchanged. In this case, the general message is that if a website uses session cookie, use cookie for authentication, which most of websites do. The attacker actually can selectively shadow the session cookies at certain URLs to attribute certain activities to the attacker. So the consequence is like when you do some operations on a HTTPS website, and you don't really know which step actually goes to the attacker. That the consequence actually depends on the website functionalities, but in our paper we have several cases causes serious consequences. The case one is a cross-site scripting we found on Bank of America website. The process we are interested involved two URLs. At the first URL, the server actually tried to read a certain cookie and do a validation. If the cookie exists and legitimate, this server actually goes to somewhere else, and we cannot really explore this problem, the server. But if the cookie is not present, so the server tries to cite a cookie with a value and redirect to the second URL. On the second URL, the server just directly uses the cookie without validation. The problem is that at the second URL, there's a cookie validation process missed. The server seems to make an assumption that since this is a redirection and I just set a cookie. So I must read a cookie with the value, what the value I set. But the assumption actually is wrong. Because remember that cookie allows same name but different domain and different paths cookie exist. So every time when a URL comes, the cookie value may be different, no matter how you set cookies, just because there might be same name cookie but different domain, different paths exist. We actually figure out a way to inject two cookies. The first cookie to clean a cookie, the first one is to pass this cookie validation, and the second one, we use a certain pass so that we shadow this good cookie they set from the first URL. Then we launch this cross-site scripting attack. The third case is some side channel leakage we found. In general, cookie injection actually enables various ways to control encrypted traffic because you can inject what you know from encrypted traffic. And we try to use this ability for side channel attacks. And we used this ability as a vector of the breach attack, what I'm not going to detail in here. Another attack we found is that this cookie injection can make the general HTTPS side channel, size side channel much worse. Instead of just passively measuring this HTTPS traffic, if the attacker wants to know which URL a browser goes, so the attacker just needs to inject cookies with different size and the password domain of those sensitive URLs. So by measuring the size, and he can easily know which URL the attacker goes, the browser goes. Those attacker cases together, we think demonstrate 2 points. The first is that web developers actually naturally unknown of this problem, so they use cookie web very uncomfortably. The other is that cookie injection potentially connects to a lot of known attacks. So the bad effects, actually, you cannot really enumerate. Given the situation is bad, so what should we do? Well, there are some existing mitigations. For shared domain providers, they just need to be aware of the public suffix list. And the web developers need to be careful with cookies. Especially, they should deploy full HSTS. But we, actually, during the research, we have heard there's quite some practical difficulties of deploy full HSTS. So we think that's probably a non process to go. Since lack of isolation in cookie policy is the root cause of the problem, so that motivates us to think about if we can change cookie policy browser to defend against the problem in the first place. We tried a few approaches. First, we tried to isolate HTTPS and HTTP cookies so that active network, you don't need to worry about. But that actually breaks a lot of mixed content websites, mainly logging and logout. Then we try to isolate secure cookies. So if you mark a cookie as secure, you don't need to worry about this. But still, we found a broken case. There's one website. They try to log out from HTTP, but the HTTP request, the logout of HTTP, the HTTP logout will try to clean secure cookies. So we have to support this, and then we turned our policy change to only allow secure cookies to be cleaned. In this case, we didn't find any broken cases. To conclude, we should pay much more attention on this problem. Developers need to be very careful about using cookies. Probably just don't use cookies. The shared domain providers need to be aware of the public surface list. Well, check your website if your website use shared domains. And the important message is that instead of saying HTTPS can defend against mines and malware, we should just say full HSTS. This is actually the correct answer. We should also advocate and facilitate the deployment. And last, browsers might consider to change cookie policy in some way. Thank you.
Questions from the audience. I know it's early, but you must have some questions.
Hi, I'm Garrett Wasserman from the CERT Coordination Center. Hi. I have a question about the browsers. Did you see this behavior in all of the major browsers? I think you mentioned that.
Well, this is actually a problem with specification. The specification just make a cookie work this way. It's not an implementation problem.
Okay, it's at the specification level?
Yeah. It's cookie just designed in this way.
Okay. And also, I think you had said on your last slide there that you suggest that the browsers implement your change to cookie handling. Have any of the browsers actually implemented that yet?
Or no, not really. Okay. Since we don't really have the ability to do very large scale evaluation, we just did some kind of evaluation. Actually, the browser change policy is not the main goal of our research. We just want to say we bring people's attention here and then we can discuss if we want to change.
Oh, sure. Thank you.
So I was curious about the finding of the vulnerabilities in the wild that you did. Was that a manual analysis that you did on pages that you suspected might have issues, or is there an automated way to do that?
We just did it manually. All this basically we did manually. It's not really some automated. There's difficulties to automate this process. Even you try to find the vulnerabilities of these websites, because it's black box, you don't need it. You don't have a source code. And often you see websites use a lot of cookies and the cookies are encoded and the name actually doesn't make any sense. So you need a guess, and mostly it's manual effort.
Any other questions? Okay, let's thank the speaker again.